knock on our door.
Knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too.
Thank you for knocking on our door, and welcome to the Regal Beagle Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the much-loved television sitcom Three's Company. Here, we review and discuss each and every Three's Company episode covering all 8 seasons in chronological order. My name is Danko Jones, and joining me today is my friend, Barrett Martin, notable drummer for esteemed acts like The Screaming Trees, Mad Season, Tuatara, Skin Yard, The Walking Papers, The Levy Walkers, Cedell Davis. He's also a producer, a composer, ethnomusicologist, and an author with his upcoming book, The Singing Earth, coming out this July. Barrett, welcome to the Regal Beagle Podcast.
Mr. Jones, I'm very happy to be here with you at the Regal Beagle.
I'm so happy that you are, well, you're my second guest, but you are my first, the first person I thought of outside of my cousin Cameron to get onto this podcast because of our Three's Company talks back when we were on tour together back in 2013.
That's right. And I think that if you are a child of the 70s, you cannot, I mean, there's no way you can escape the influence of the Three's Company series. I mean, I probably saw every single episode of it. And the reason I remember the reason why you and I started talking about it is that it had this projection of what was happening in society in America, and it projected what was to come. And yeah, many of those things actually did come to pass. So yeah, I think that even though it was a comedy and people saw it as sort of like this, you know, weeknight entertainment, it was probably like Tuesday night or something. You know, it was one of those kind of things.
Right.
What it did, though, is it talked to people about what was going on in American culture through a comedic delivery, which is kind of like, you know, like All in the Family. You know, Archie Bunker did the same kind of thing, talking about the changes in American society and being able to talk about it in a comedic setting. And that's why people tuned in and watched it.
I agree with you. And maybe it spoke to a different demographic than All in the Family did when it did come on the air.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was just a kid. I was,
yeah,
you
it's
know,
hard
probably,
to grasp. Yeah.
I was only 10. Well, from, okay, so yeah, I watched it from being, you know, a preteen all the way through being a teenager. So I was old enough to kind of get what was going on. I saw the inside story and I saw the humor but I think what's really, we can talk about these different episodes, but the things that I saw as being the most important themes was, number one, it talked about how gay people were perceived at that time in the 70s. And it sort of showed how we could look at them equally, but we had to like learn to evolve ourselves as human beings in order to, you know, catch up with that. Because the United States was still pretty conservative in the 70s, you know. I mean, it still is now, but in the 70s it was still pretty, you know, like the sort of old school conservatism was still there. But at the same time, there are all kinds of progressive things that were starting to emerge in popular culture, through the 70s and into the 80s. And of course, obviously now in the 21st century, it's, you know, way beyond that.
And what would be the second point?
Well, the second point is that all comedy is built around misunderstandings. And actually, for that matter, all conflict in human relationship is around misunderstandings. But you could also see that you can see the humorous side of that too.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that are the most important culturally, I think. The ability to have a sense of humor and be able to understand complex social situations through humor. Because humor is one of the highest forms of intelligence. It's the ability to look at any given situation and see, you know, actually see into it what it actually is and be able to, you know, kind of make a joke about it. And then everybody kind of laughs and the laughing opens up the humanity and then we're more connected.
Excellent points. let's get started. When you talk about humor and laughing, I don't think my cousin Cameron would apply it to this show. But let's proceed. So this episode is we're going to talk about season 2, episode 7. It's called Roper's Car. It aired November 1st, 1977. It was written by Alan J. Levitt, who also wrote for Maud, All in the Family, and Beretta. And it was directed by Bill Hobbin, who directed Three's Company episodes all the way till 78. He also did some Bob Hope specials. And the synopsis of the episode, well, the kids pool their money. They buy Mr. Roper's old car for $212.60, even though Roper has made a deal with the used car dealership for $200. Wagstaff is the name of the used car dealer. He offers Roper $1,000 because he's told it's a 57 Chevy, which is a valuable model. But in reality, to the kids, the car is a lemon. Roper ropes the kids back into selling him the car, but in the end, the car isn't actually a 57 Chevy, it's a 58. Roper loses out on the deal with Wagstaff, and the kids buy Mrs. Roper the extra $100 on a coat for Mrs. Roper. Barrett, what did you think about this particular episode?
Well, having bought several used cars in my lifetime, I've been in that situation where you buy, you know, the $200 car, even a $1,000 car, and you think you're getting a good deal, but then there's all these problems, and, you know, you realize that you just wasted $1,000 because the car is about to fall apart. And that's, of course, what they discover when they buy Mr. Roper's car. And then, you know, Mr. Roper is, I'm not sure what his archetype is, because he just changes all the time. And I have a whole theory about Mr. Roper actually being, you know, closeted himself, which is why he's always, you know, making those jokes towards Jack Tripper. And we can get into that, you know, like in later episodes where it starts to come out a little bit more.
Yeah,
but but anyway, Mr. Roper's like, he thinks he's willing to sell the car to the kids because he gets an extra $12 more than what they use. So, I mean, he's willing to kind of break his word for $12. So you already know that, well, maybe his word isn't very good, you know? And then of course, then he finds out that he could have sold it for a lot more, and he wants to buy it back, and he wants to, you know, pretend that, well, he tries to hide the fact that he's going to get all this extra money from the used car dealer. So I think what it shows, like from a kind of social moral standpoint, is that in American culture, people will break their word and basically lose their honor over a small amount of money. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm reading a larger thing into this.
I think you're dead on.
But that's my feeling, is that when it comes to, you know, small time capitalism, and of course all the way up to big time capitalism, even at the small individual level, like the sale of a used car. And it's also interesting to look at the fact that you've got three different conversations going on between Mr. Roper and his wife. And his wife is the voice of, you know, like honesty and, you know, you got to do the right thing here. Right, exactly. Then he's got the conversation going on with the used car salesman. And then the third conversation is going on with the kids. And he's kind of, you know, you can see that he's a little bit torn between all of them. But at the end of the day, he's willing to give up his honor for a $12 profit.
Strain his marriage, screw over his tenants,
right,
just for the money.
Right. And it's kind of weird to think about the fact, I mean, also, he's willing to sell the car to his tenants that live above them. He's going to see them every day, and he still knows he's selling them a lemon. You know, I mean that is over and above the fact that,
right,
you know, that's in addition to breaking his word. He's willing to just, like, you know, that's not, you know, it's not a good thing to do that.
Well, for me, Three's Company episodes are always best with, you know, pratfalls and innuendo, but this episode, it's a way to start these episodes with you very slowly, because to me it was very flat in a way. You know, it was just a very basic story. I don't know if there is any misunderstanding past the deal that they had between the used car salesman and how much money it was, but you know, there wasn't anyone listening in on a conversation that was misunderstood or anything. But
right, it's interesting. It doesn't have the formula that they used in later episodes. It totally lacks it, like the triple misunderstanding, which we can talk about later. But it's just a straight flat, not flat, but just a straight, very sort of predictable storyline. You know, it doesn't have that misunderstanding thing.
But that observation you had about Mr. Roper is the same observation my cousin Cameron had during the first 12 episodes he watched of Three's Company. And he was convinced that, and he had never seen the show before, convinced that Mr. Roper was gay.
I think so. So for your listeners out there, when you go back and watch these episodes, Mr. Roper is constantly making fun of Jack Tripper. And Jack isn't gay, of course. He's straight because he goes on dates with women. But he has to pretend to be gay in order to live in an apartment building with two other women. Now, this is really interesting because, I mean, think about the fact that the Stonewall riots began in 1969. Okay, that's really the beginning of the gay rights movement. And so Three's Company starts, what year was the first episode?
76.
76. Okay, so it's just, you know, 6 or 7 years later that it airs, but they probably were writing it, you know, for a year before it, you know, actually went into production. So what they're doing is they're commenting on the fact that in American culture, this straight man is playing a gay man who's actually a straight man, and he can only live in an apartment building because it's perceived that he's gay. Therefore, it's okay to live with two single women. Okay, that's conservative America saying it's not okay for people to live together unless they're married, but it's okay if you're gay. You see what I mean? Like, it's got this contradiction to it, but at the same time, gay people are still being discriminated against.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Roper uses this as a way to make fun of gay people. So his character, you know, he does those affections with his face and his, you know, the wrist and all of that. I mean, it's completely politically incorrect. Like it's just totally wrong by every standard. I don't know that you could even do that on television today. But I actually think that they're saying there are all these people that are gay, that are in the closet, and they don't know how to come out. You know, Mr. Roper he's married, and every episode, Mrs. Roper is joking about how they never have sex.
Yeah.
You know, he can't be intimate with her. Why is that? So what did your cousin say about this?
He made the same observation. He had never seen the show. And he's going through it in chronological order. He was not impressed, but that was the one takeaway he had for every time he'd see Mr. Roper. He was convinced that Roper was gay. The big thing is, their marriage, the fact that Mrs. Roper makes a big deal of their sex life or their non-existent sex life. But also, one must be careful to – we're looking at this through 2017 eyes. And I don't know if even the writers were aware that they were kind of making these comments when they were doing it. They just thought, hey, I know a guy who's kind of like this Roper guy. And maybe it was maybe Roper in the show is not gay, but the person that he was based on in real life was maybe. I don't know. Through the writer's eyes.
I mean, if you could ever get one of those writers on your show and ask them what were their real intentions, what were they trying to say? I mean, we are looking at it literally 30 years later, or almost 40 years later at this point. And we're analyzing something through, you know, the enlightened, you know, lens of 21st century, you know, human rights, basically. And I will say this about the show. There's a certain innocence in the way they write. You know, it's not, you don't sense that they're trying to be, abusive or that they're trying to intimidate people or anything like that. They're just talking about 1970s America that has this kind of crazy, you know, it's we're starting to open socially, you know, the sexual revolution is in full swing and people are starting to really express who they are. But at the same time, you know, there's kind of like these old traditions, you know, like you can't live with you know, unmarried single women, you know, you can't do that. It's yeah. like we won't give you a lease for an apartment if that's what you want to do. You got to be married or you have to be all be the same sex. And the only exception is that Jack has to, you know, pretend that he's gay in order to do that. And you get the impression that this gives Mr. Roper quite a bit of delight.